Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, everybody, Robert Evans here, and I wanted to let you know this is a compilation episode. So every episode of the week that just happened is here in one convenient and with somewhat less ads package for you to listen to in a long stretch if you want. If you've been listening to the episodes every day this week, there's going to be nothing new here for you, but you can make your own decisions.
Sacred 23. Extremely exciting. It's finally 2023. That means only funny things can happen this year.
That's your intro to the system.
That's right, Sophie. Welcome to
You crushed it, buddy. I won't hear any criticism.
Yeah.
Welcome to It Could Happen Here. 2023.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to say they're welcome, but it is 2023. So
Lord.
Good work. Enjoy your year of discord, as if any year of the last like 10 has not been a year of discord.
Every year previously was totally normal and not chaotic.
So well, it's all downhill from here.
First off, welcome back. We love some of you, probably, presumably. I haven't met you, any of the ones that I love, but I assume that you're out there. How's everybody doing? How's everyone's new year?
Wow, just an absolute,
that was a lie.
Absolute slap in the face to anyone you've met on any of your live events that's a fan.
Yeah. Right. I love all of you.
I'm not like, right. So nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in person for my event. Fuck you. Yeah. That's what you said.
This whole episode is a series of slaps to the face because it's not 2023 for us. We're lying. We're all lying to them.
Yeah.
Right now.
Who knows if we make it that far?
We're recording this on December 19th, 2022. And what has happened today, friends? Also, who are you? Who is on this episode?
Well, Garrison's here, as I've already spoken into the microphone.
Oh my God.
Do you know who else has spoken into the microphone?
Sophie. Shireen? Question mark? I'm Shireen.
Shireen.
Now you have.
Sophie?
Yeah.
Sophie? Yeah.
Yep.
James?
Oh.
Yeah,
there's only one left.
Oh, no. Mia. I don't think I've actually spoken into this episode yet. So
you have
now.
Now
I have.
Now
you
have.
You've started the day.
We did it.
So
that's how you introduce a podcast.
That was so incredibly awkward.
No, it was perfect.
No. Magnificent.
As if we had never done a podcast before.
Before we get to this, to some of the Q&A stuff, what has happened today when we're recording it?
Oh, well, today is the day, is the one-day anniversary of me showing Garrison the movie Strange Days, written by James Cameron. A New Year's classic. Oh,
wow.
Such a good movie.
Not seen it.
No, oh, no. you gotta watch it. It is.
Robert
it
got
is.
An alert on his phone that was just like, memory is 1 year.
And it's a lot of
so it's one day.
Watched it one last day. Night. a lot of violence against the LAPD in that film.
Yeah,
democracy has triumphed today. That's what's happened. Democracy I will say, has happened.
Yeah, definitely not a pro LAPD movie. Also, you get to repeatedly see a couple of now prominent actors' O faces, which is great.
In a slightly problematic context, but...
a deeply problematic context, but a good movie.
What actors are in this movie?
What's his
Ralph
name?
Ralph Fiennes?
Ralph Fiennes is the main character, and he looks exactly like 10 years ago... Bradley Cooper in this movie. Yeah.
Don't insult Ralph. Don't do that.
They both look good. That's what I mean.
Yeah. No.
Okay, well, Ralph. That's cruel. He's great, and Angela Bassett is fucking incredible in it.
She's amazing. Queen.
Yeah. Tom Sizemore is present. In the movie,
we're just gonna Vincent go through D'Onofrio. The entire cast and crew.
Strange, who's the gaffer, Robert?
Yeah,
all right.
Favorite is Vincent D'Onofrio looks exactly like Tim Heidecker's character in that I Think You Should Leave sketch where they're at the UFO themed restaurant. It's uncanny. great
to
film.
Know that you're still doing. I Think You Should Leave. References in the Lord's Year 2023.
Well, that actually I showed my
family it before they left to go see Other Family for Christmas.
How did that go?
Nice. I sat my family down to watch the second half of season two.
And
magnificent.
Yeah,
I love that. It's
divine. Good divine.
And that leads into my only prediction for the next year, which
not, is this
is not
a
prediction.
This is
a Q&A. Robert, get it together.
What are you
doing, Evan?
Oh God, come on. All right, what's the first question then?
Well,
what do these sons of bitches want to know?
In an alternate universe where It Could Happen Here has a corporate office, does the staff get a Robert Evans book for holiday presents or a gift card? And we can answer this because despite not having a corporate office, there still was a holiday gift, which I have not actually received mine yet, so I can't say what mine is. But I know other people
Why
have received
you
theirs.
Yours?
I don't know, Sophie.
I ordered yours for her.
Well, Sophie, you know, sometimes it'd be like that.
Tracking. Mm-hmm. It's probably going
to
be.
Yeah, Sophie about to ruin some UPS driver's day.
Uh-huh. Yeah, chaos.
But what did everyone else receive for their
dearest,
It Could Happen
dearest
Here?
Dearest Garrison will be delivered by 5:45 p.m. today. Out for
today.
Out for delivery.
There you go.
It's
there
okay, Garrison. I didn't get shit either.
Oh,
boo! Fucking
I actually
who?
Did oh. buy you something, but it hasn't come yet. Devastatingly,
what did everyone else get for their holiday gift? Was it a Robert Evans book?
No, it wasn't.
Oh my God,
no,
Robert,
that would be
Robert,
deeply unhinged.
Oh my God! Imagine you're that fucked up. Like, imagine
hilarious.
You're that unhinged that you're like.
I think you should do that to iHeart. To like the higher ups of iHeart, send them your book as a gift.
My the second job I ever had, which was or third job I guess, which was working for this accountant guy. This like
that he was
like
not right. Yeah.
He was a retirement like an advisor guy. He would help old people get their money in order to retire. It was mostly like helping him host events at like a Texas Roadhouse where we would try to get old people to buy annuities. But so I worked for this guy, and the day I started the job, he gave me a copy of his self-published novel, Operation Night Watch, which was about a group of Navy SEALs going rogue to stop drug dealers.
Wow.
And
my
is
God.
One of the worst things I've ever read.
Oh, you read it?
Oh, I mean, I attempted to.
What a kind
person. Someone, when I mentioned it once on the show, somebody found and bought a copy and posted
that. That's
unhinged.
Yeah, give that money to someone else.
That's unhinged.
Oh, he can't be alive anymore. There's no way he's still alive.
It was probably on like eBay or something.
Yeah. That man has been dead for years, I'm sure.
But okay. we still have an answer. We still have an answer to the question.
Get to the point here.
We got tiny cans of mace. Two little personal maces. One for the left hand, one for the right hand, so you can dual wield.
I really like it. It's very compact. New pepper spray has been on my to-buy list for like months because mine was expired like a year ago, but I've never actually bought one, and so it was perfect. And now it's just so tiny. I can put it in like my fanny pack and just continue on my day.
That's right.
How do you know it won't work if it's expired?
I just looked it up. I looked it up and I was just like, I don't want to, like, I don't know. I just, it was on my to buy list. I obviously didn't buy it yet. It wasn't like pressing.
You don't want to like hurt somebody with expired pepper spray.
Yeah, it's a propellant that expires.
It'll yeah. Okay. The can itself gets like faulty.
You mace yourself.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Let's see. So we're going to be going through some of the questions that we got for the previous. Sorry, my cats are making.
Also, I do like that Mason. Person. That person really thought that Robert was that person that was like, "Hey, yeah. Happy holidays. Here's my book. I do get the royalties. That's you're so welcome."
Yeah, we should. You're right, though, Sophie. We should use the corporate cards to buy more copies of my book. That's a good idea.
Sure.
We can ship them to the sea, though. It doesn't matter where they go.
Airdrop them
you
in
have
the
a book burning. Yeah.
For the next question, and we're using the questions from the previous It Could Happen Here live stream for this, by the way. So if we didn't get to your question, we're getting to some more of them right now.
Unless your question sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, always well, very personal.
Or was very
yes,
personal.
That's yeah. that's most that, of the
that's
ones.
What I meant yeah. by sucked.
So, do you know of a way to get involved in mutual aid without using social media? I don't really use it for mental health reasons. Good decision there to not use social media.
Continue not using social media.
Yeah,
A lot of mutual aid organizing or like requests happen on social media, but I mean there's. I guess it depends on how you use social media, I suppose. Like, it might be useful to have a friend that follows some of the social media stuff in your local area, whether that be on Twitter or Mastodon or Instagram, and then can, like, relay to you if there's local events. Or you can just, like, section off, like, once a week you check on just a few of those things, and then you delete the app from your phone again. Because once you are like plugged into a local community, then people can just like directly send you flyers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you have to have those connections there in the first place. And those connections are really best made by going to things on the ground, whether it be, you know, a Food Not Bombs type thing, whether it be, you know, like a clothing swap. Lots of local events do happen in people's cities. And once you actually go there in person, that's where real community actually gets built. So it's kind of just breaking the ice to actually go to a few in-person things, and then people can send you, you know, direct flyers and stuff if you don't want to be doom scrolling looking for things.
You don't have to even have an account if you don't decide not to. You can like view profiles on Twitter and Instagram without an account. Like you can't like see the comments or whatever, but if you just want to see their profile every once in a while and check in on what they're doing, you can do that online with no account.
Yeah. Often as well, like, we're doing mutual aid things here, it tends to focus on the border a lot or unhoused people. And, like, in both cases, you can just show up and you'll meet someone who's helping in most instances, and then they can direct you, right? They can text you or signal you, whatever. Like, there were tons of people in 2018 when the migrant caravan arrived who were, like, much older, not on social media, often with church groups, and they didn't hugely, like, have... I would say a lot of experience in that kind of area, but they deeply wanted to help and they showed up and people were like, hey, can you go to Costco and get this? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. And
yeah,
and we used WhatsApp and it was fine.
And like check around. Another option would be obviously if you have like a radical meeting space in your city, you can check there. If you don't have those, you can even check, see if there's any like radical coffee shops or cafes that maybe have like a bulletin board. People will often put up flyers for stuff there. Just you really have to start trying to be like plugged into your actual like IRL local community, and that's generally how that goes.
You have to be more proactive than if you had social media is the main thing.
You still have to show up either way, right? Like if, in the end.
Do you know who else wants you to show up online?
Oh,
Robert Evans.
I don't.
These products and services that want you to
we're now exclusively only sponsored by Robert's books.
Yes, the literature of Robert Evans.
And here's an excerpt.
All right, and we're back. Speaking of the internet, Robert, or anyone, I suppose, do you think there's a way to get back to fulfilling the promise of the early internet?
No, I don't. I think the early internet was a thing that happened that in part was the way that it was because our brains did not have any kind of tolerance or like we're not like prepared for it. And it kind of grew up as we became capable of like, I don't know, like the internet grew more social as we got used to it. And I don't think that can ever happen again. Like those weird little moments, where I don't know. My answer is no. I don't think it'll ever happen again in the same way that like, you're never going to get those weird little moments that you had at like the birth of, you know, the printing press or whatever. Like,
you know,
it was a unique moment in history and it's never going to come again. But which doesn't mean that something else won't happen. But the internet's not like the fact that we've all lived through the social media era means even once all these companies go bust, our brains have still been changed by them.
Yeah.
Too much to ever go back to posting the way we once did.
No, we're too far gone, I think.
Yeah.
On a kind of similar note, in a few days, we have an episode from Andrew on digital commons. And that kind of revolves around this same kind of question. So in a few days, we'll have an episode kind of about this topic ran by Andrew. James, you had something?
Yeah, sometimes, like, obviously, like, the internet is terrible in many ways, but, like, when we talk about, like, what happened in Myanmar, that series that Robert and I did, like, that seems to me like it's delivering on some of the promises of the early internet. Like, it's mad that, you know, a young person, like, who is facing a coup and wants democracy in this part of Asia can go online, speak to some dude in... These aren't real like people I've spoken to, but like some guy in his garage in Ohio who's 3D printing guns, and that person can help the other person arm themselves and defend their right to choose who governs them or if they're governed at all. Like, that is really fucking cool, and that doesn't happen without the internet. And so, you know,
yeah, there's also from that. Yeah, it's not that there's not going to be good things done with the internet or that it can't be made better, but it's never going to be what it was because
yeah.
We simply know too much.
Let's see. What are some inspiring recent examples of cooperation increasing survival odds to show the type that thinks they just need ammo to survive?
Another good touchstone for this would be the movie Tremors, which shows that
unfortunately,
can be a critical
actually,
part of a survival
yeah,
plan. Yeah. Nobody lives Robert's without right. community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think Robert actually is correct here.
More broadly, this person's like consciously or unconsciously paraphrasing Kropotkin, right? But like, we have all just lived through a pandemic, and they are still living through a pandemic, I guess, which has changed the world, killed hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And like, the reason a lot of people got through that, a lot of people who weren't able to work or were immunocompromised and couldn't go out as much, is because other people helped them. Like, no one shot COVID and no one fed themselves in the lockdown because they had, you know, tons of 5.56 docked away. Like, a ton of mutual aid happened. A lot of terrible shit happened as well, but that's a bigger example, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What genres of music have each of you been listening to lately?
I'm a big classical head. I don't care if that is like nerdy.
I also listen to a lot of classical.
It's the best. When you're driving, everything becomes like cinematic and it's calming. And sometimes words distract me. So my go-to is classical.
To what I would consider classical music, which is second and third wave ska.
Bass.
The only classical music, in my opinion.
I listen to The Clash, Suede, and the Manic Street Preachers more or less exclusively. They're the only bands that matter.
Yeah. I think if it's not classical, I'm trying to, like, be, I don't know, I'm, like, dancing around. So it's either, like, it's, like, two extremes for me. It's either classical and I'm, like, chill, going to sleep, or I'm getting ready and I want to feel something.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mia?
I have the most absolutely dog shit music taste.
It's brave. Really bad. Brave.
But the music that I listen to that I think is legitimately good, that's not like power metal or like weird shit, is I've been going back to like my youth, and my youth is a combination of like surf rock and
No God.
Shame. This is a safe place.
Well, also,
there can
also
be
like
some shame.
I,
Like, what? Okay, like
I support you,
like,
Mia.
Like Pat Benatar, sort of like that. There's a sort of era of like.
That's beautiful.
I don't know what you call it. Like lesbian glam rock. I don't know.
You shouldn't have to defend yourself. Recently. This is a safe space. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
This is my non.
You keep saying that. I don't think we ever agreed to this.
I usually listen to a lot of music while writing and researching. I just finished up two pretty big writing projects. So I've been listening to a lot of music. Most of it's like ambient electronica. Mm-hmm. Some classicals thrown in there if I need to get a little bit more like energy. Been listening to some Trent Reznor kind of ambient stuff, and like a lot of. I also listen to a lot of remixes of the Mario Galaxy soundtrack.
So, wait, what?
There
okay.
you go.
Okay,
wait, send that over now. No, I like that.
Wait. Okay. All right. I need to plug a truly awful song.
What?
The worst song ever.
Don't give them attention.
No. We got it. Okay, look. Donkey Kong has to slam this way. It has to be this way. X Space Jam X DK rap. I need y'all to know that this exists. It is it is incredible. It is an otherworldly experience. There's also a version of it that's the DK rap, but also One Winged Angel.
Well, okay, I think this.
Wait, Garrison, do you listen to Max Richter? I think you would like Max Richter. He's like, he does a lot of soundtracks for shows, so his stuff is kind of like melancholic and piano-y, but I think you might like it.
I will look him up. Thank
Good
you.
Name.
Sounds yeah. Like solid. It's spelled Richter, I'm pretty
sure. I got it.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you should also listen to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, who did a wonderful album.
Oh, no, that is the worst song ever. Oh, God.
No, don't.
So,
check out their 2020 album.
Their George Floyd song is literally
incredibly appropriate. Deeply appropriate.
Yeah.
Speaking of listening to things,
speaking of things that are problems. what is the most troubling thing that isn't being reported on or isn't taken seriously by the wider public?
The fact that none of you said you listened to any rap music or any type of music that wasn't just...
I thought Tupac was a given, okay?
Scott
he's a level
a
on his
of,
own, okay?
I've been listening to Tribe Called Quest recently. Okay.
I listen to a little bit of Biggie every now and again, and I got my Mos Def always loaded up, especially around the new year. I love listening to Life in Marvelous Times.
Yeah,
Black
my
on
guy.
Both Sides is a hell of an album.
Let's see.
I've always been more Biggie.
There's a guy called Christian Parrish Takes a Gun. He raps by Superman. He's like from the Crow Nation. I think his stuff is cool.
Most troubling thing that isn't being reported on or taken seriously enough by the wider public. Besides our musical tastes.
I'm going to be biased and always say, like, Middle Eastern news and Palestine and, like,
sure.
fair
yeah.
and balanced
sure.
reporting. And even, like, Syria and Yemen and all of that stuff. I think none of that gets enough attention.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say fucking scams. Like, just on a daily basis, I feel like my phone gets 6 to 8 spam calls, scam calls at least. And, like, it's and someone was making a note of this earlier because like a bunch of scam stories people have been sharing them this year. But like there's all sorts of fucked up things. Like if a relative gets arrested, as soon as the police post the fact that like publicly post that they've been arrested, like the family, if they have numbers that scammers can find, will start getting auto dialed. By like accounts claiming to be the police, saying that like you need to put money in their account now, or they're going into general population, and it's all these are all like low hanging fruit things. Like they're targeting people who are not very savvy. Often people who have some sort of like mental disability, right? So folks who are kind of living a marginal existence in a lot of ways. As it is, and they are like it's making it incredibly difficult for and folks who have like are cognitively impaired for whatever reason, including the fact that they're elderly. There's just like this. It's never been like this before. The sheer density of scams that people have to wade through. And again, most of you, we've all kind of noticed it getting more common, but you may not have noticed how kind of brutal it's gotten. Because you're not the target demographic for this stuff, right? That's why they all have like filters in them to try and weed out the people who are savvy enough to know that they're being scammed. But there's a number of things. This is the result of decisions that the FTC made, in order to like make it a lot easier for people to use shit like auto dialers and to carry out like phone based scams. But it's just been punted on by every presidential administration in our lifetime as the internet has made it easier to automate this stuff. And the explosion of machine learning tools that are widely available, these kind of AIs that people are joking about right now, like it's all going to create the capacity to more effectively automate scams. I had one that could have gotten me the other day where I got a call from my bank that was listed as from my bank, as in like on, like it was my bank's phone number. Like it was, it came up as them on the, and they were like, hey, you know, someone has, there's some charges. Can we run them by you? We want to make sure. And they were like chart things I had not bought. They were like wire transfers and shit. And they were like, oh, it looks like, you know, somebody's gotten access to your account. And the call dropped before I could finish it. So I called them back. And when I called my bank back, they were like, oh yeah, that was someone spoofing our number. They were trying to get personal information out of you. This shit is so fucking endemic, and no one is doing a goddamn thing about it. There's like one anemic attempt in Congress to slightly address it primarily through like education, but it is a massive problem. It's part of what's breaking society, the fact that like everyone is constantly flooded by this low-level cloud of people trying to destroy their financial lives. It's real bad.
Do you know what else is trying to destroy your financial lives?
Oh, the products and services that support this podcast, Garrison.
And Robert's book.
And we are back for one final time for this episode. Wow. This is actually a question that I feel is pretty important that I wish people thought about a bit more, at least within like, you know, our general sphere. Where do you draw the line between fascist politics and non-fascist conservative politics?
Well, at the moment in the United States, I don't think there's a line to be drawn because the mainstream of the Republican Party has completely thrown themselves in behind one of or both of two fascists. In terms of like personally, I guess it depends on whether or not people support there being like things like penalties does somebody support banning books? Does somebody support arresting folks for expressing political opinions that differ from theirs? Does somebody support, you know, expanding the penalties for petty crimes to include like violence? Like those are all things that can suggest that somebody's a fascist. But at the end of the day, anybody who supports the Republican Party right now is supporting a fascist movement. So I don't feel there's any sort of, I don't draw a line in my head anymore, to be entirely honest, because they elided the line.
I try to be very specific when I say fascist versus just like a regular conservative in my reporting. Like when we were inside Colorado, we talked to people who were conservatives, who were against fascists and against local fascists in their community and actually doing things to help stop fascists from gaining power within their local community.
Yeah.
I think if you look at a lot of the rhetoric around queer people right now, whether it be like drag shows or trans people, that's a specific style of rhetoric that is like innately fascist. Like talking about like there was a tweet from is his name like Lindsey James? What's that guy?
Yeah, James, conceptual James.
He put out this little like meme being like, don't call them drag queens, call them like it was like some bullshit groomer thing. Like I forget the exact thing, but like that specific style of rhetorical framing is like a pretext to extermination and genocide. Like that is what they're doing. And I think that is right now is what it crosses the line is when they're creating these scapegoat groups that are going to be targeted and posing these groups as like a threat to civilization. That's where I kind of use that word for like fascist. Like that is generally in my research where I start employing that versus, you know, some random guy who I'm talking to who, you know, wants there to be lower taxes and less regulation. Because that position, as we've seen now, can eventually lead to the type of fascist policies. But I think that there is, when it comes to like people in your personal life and when it comes to like regular people who are not politicians, I think having a little bit more discretion is useful, because I think there's still a chance that some people who are currently conservative can not become fascists.
Yeah, I would agree. I think in the US context, one sort of useful litmus test for people on the right is like, are the rules of the game more important than the outcome of the game? Like, so when you look at like the sort of fascism we saw around Donald Trump, right? Like there was a point where the outcome of the game, i.e. the maintenance of power, right, became more important than the rules of the game, i.e. like basic human rights. And I think like that's a useful definition, a useful sort of, is this person dangerous? It might, like, I like Paxton's definition of fascism generally. It's not great, but it's, which has
it's
elements
useful.
Of what we've said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's useful. And I think your scapegoat group one is really key. When people are scapegoating people and they don't really give a fuck about how they eliminate those people or stop, quote unquote, right?
When which people are seeking to use the machinery of state to eliminate people and ideas that they find uncomfortable by using the force of law against them, they're fascists. And when people are supportive of ending democratic ending the democratic transfer of power in order to support an individual that they think embodies their conception of like what their country is, those people are fascists.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's one thing, and I don't think it's usually useful if you're having a conversation with an individual to call them a fascist, even if they're behaving in ways that are kind of fashy. If you think that a productive conversation can be had, that might move them in one direction or the other. But at the end of the day, if somebody is supportive, for example, of a third term for Donald Trump, that person is supporting a fascist movement. And
yes.
I don't think that there's I don't think it matters that like their individual reasons for doing it may be less fashy than someone else's. Like at the end of the day, they are supporting that. And that's kind of what matters to me.
I think it's also worth taking a little bit of a look at what happened in neoconservatism in order to sort of understand what's going on here, because I think there was an important sort of fracture, A, in terms of the fact that George Bush like basically orchestrated
G-dubs.
He didn't technically orchestrate a coup, but he rigged an election so as to put him in power, right? Like that's what the Brooks Brothers riot was. That's sort of the process that gets us the Bush win in 2000. And this is an interesting moment, because if you look at what happens to conservatism over the sort of like the last 25 years of the 20th century, there's this interesting pivot where they make, where in order to, they, you know, if you look at like what is the conservative response to communism in 1939, right? It's just like, we're going to be fascists, right? It's like literally we are going to be the Nazis. But, you know, by the time you get to like post-World War II, by the time you get really to like the 70s and 80s, they start realizing that like people don't generally like fascism that much. And so the form of anti-communism that they take starts to be this sort of like rights-based, like we're support like freedom and human rights and like free markets and democracy. And there's this point where that stuff meets with like another kind of fascist politics, which is the sort of like the 2001 era state of exception stuff that happened after 9/11, where, you know, like people start talking about the gloves coming off. And this is getting into your sort of like looking at like Walter Benjamin's like conception of what fascism is, or am I blanking on that guy's name? Like Carl Schmitt stuff, right? Where it's like, here is a part of the state that can just like destroy, like that has sovereign power and can just sort of trample over the entire legal order in order to sort of perpetuate it, right? So this is like, okay, suddenly after 2001, like after 9/11, there were just like people disappearing into torture dungeons, right? And you get this moment where, on the one hand, yeah, like because George W. Bush is one of these people who's like the sort of like freedom democracy people, but then beneath him is, you know, it collapses very quickly into this, we are the torture dungeon stuff, and this willingness literally to rig elections. And I think that's a sort of important moment, because there are sort of normal conservatives, right, who still have that kind of like freedom and liberal democracy, whatever thing. And they're not
really that fascist, kind of, but it, in some sense, it doesn't matter that much institutionally, because the part of the Republican Party that survived was a combination of the torture dungeon, which is like Gina Haspel, like, and then Trump, who is the sort of emblem of this, like the sort of like we're gonna take the election, we're gonna take power, we're gonna use the power of the state to just like murder everyone we don't like. And I don't know, like I think like you can find individual people who are conservatives who I guess like aren't Nazis, but the way that neoconservatism fragmented, and the way that that kind of state of exception politics and that politics of sort of just like mass torture, and then also the willingness to just steal elections, like that, I don't know, that stuff I think forms this another sort of core of fascism that's there alongside the sort of queer extermination and stuff, and there, I don't know, and these things fuse together in ways, and yeah, I've rambled for long enough.
We're gonna do one more question, and I think we cover a lot of upsetting things on the show, some things that maybe are not, you know, super fun to think about. We also cover some like hopeful stuff as well. But what's one thing that the crew who works in the show do to decompress and clear our minds after, you know, wading through the trenches of the digital hellscape?
Pass.
I feel like we might have answered something similar to this on the live
show. I saw Robert playing Cyberpunk 2077 last night, so I know there's at least one thing.
It does allow me to pretend that Keanu Reeves is my friend, which is nice.
There you see. So
he's your friend. You just got to meet him first. He's a very nice guy. I like to go camping. I like to go outside. Like I like to swim in the ocean and ride my bike and hike and camp and rock climb.
Yeah, I second that. I need to go outside and just even like a simple walk or with trees and hiking, I think it really helps me just decompress and be present again.
Hanging out with queer people and like not, and intentionally not talking about Twitter bullshit, just like going and doing something, just like
very
laying
important
around in the grass and just like talking about gay shit. It rules. It's the salve that heals the heart.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everybody.
What's
for
your
listening.
Answer?
Me? Yeah. Oh, see, I was gonna try to just like
nope,
just
nope,
just like
nope,
go
nope,
go right past that, good wrap job, up the episode Shereen, in a nice little bow. I don't know. I've been trying to get back into doing more kind of art stuff with my camera, whether that be photography or filmmaking, in like short form stuff. What else have I been doing? Yeah, I don't know. Taking drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shrooms. There you go. There it is. Shrooms are healing.
Shocking. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. Incredible to say that on the podcast.
Now you can wrap it up if you want to.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to our Q&A episode.
That's what I do to relax.
Thank you. See, that's the thing to do. That's how you can
actually
pay me the medium bucks, buddy.
Actually, there is one person who has tried to skirt past this question. Sophie.
Yes, Sophie.
Yeah, Sophie.
What the hell?
She looks. Yeah.
What do you want?
Sophie, you not only have to deal with, you know, all of the bad stuff that we talk about, but you also have to deal with us. Mm-hmm. So what do you do to compress and clear
decompress
your mind?
Well, first decompress of all, each and every one of you are the best. So let's start there. I really like making food for my friends and like meeting a friend for a coffee and just like walking outside. Or like finding like a little place that's like a local place, and just when you go in, there's like barely anyone in there, but then you get to talk to the people that work there, and then order a nice little dessert or something. It's that kind of thing.
I love that.
I'm like, aww. I'm like, I have friends. That's literally what I read it. I said it and it sounded horrible. And then like obviously like having pets and being around animals is really solid. But it's also just like having a healthy balance of, you know, focusing on a lot of the negative stuff, but really also putting your energy into a lot of the positive stories. I know that a lot of people feel like It Could Happen Here tends to lean towards the negative, but I really feel like we're a hopeful show. And I feel
absolutely,
like as a network, Cool Zone Media tries to lean towards the hope and find, you know, the good and the bad. And, you know, that's why we have shows like Cool People Did Cool Stuff, which is with Margaret Kiljoy, that really helps balance out a lot of the other things. So, yeah, I think finding the good and the bad, eating yummy food with your friends and petting all the pets you can.
Yeah. You know, I also think a huge thing for all of us is taking plenty of Alpha Brain supplements. I like
all right,
to take them.
That doesn't for us today, Brad. That doesn't for us today. Thank you for listening to It Could Happen Here. have a good year of Discord.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Oh, crikey, be biffy, be doppy, boo.
No, I literally, because Garrison's so mean about the UK, I literally almost got Garrison all UK themed gifts for Christmas.
Oh, hell yeah. Oy, I'm going to buy them so many things there when I go home.
There was a teapot with the flag. It was so horrible. God. I didn't do it because I know you wouldn't use it, but it was so funny.
Welcome cosplay as a turf.
To It Could Happen Here, a podcast. Do you guys want to hear my Boston accent?
Nope.
No.
Oi, I am from Boston, I am. That's it. That's my Boston.
Anderson literally started growling as you did that. That's how much he hates the Celtic.
It's a crime against humanity.
Everybody gets angry at my Boston accent.
Oh, Jesus.
I thought it was pretty
good.
That's
Australian. What are you doing?
Just pick one word and say it.
Oh, Boston is the Australia of the Northeast.
So this episode, we're going to be going through our predictions for 2023.
Prediction number one, Robert might not make it.
Oh, no! He's spiraling.
Sophie, you predict that every year, and it's barely ever true.
Oh,
a little piece of you dies every year.
Robert's going to get too drunk, buy a plane ticket to Boston, then get lost and never return.
That would
it's
make
okay,
me so
Garrison.
Sad.
I can blend in.
That's the plot of a Dropkick Murphys song.
Blend in with my seamless Boston accent.
No, no one will be able to understand you. You'll be like in a foreign country, just like trying
classic
to get
Boston.
Okay.
Crikey, it's like, why are you just doing Australia?
It's Boston.
Yeah, we're the home of the koala bear.
So it's not my fault that all accents eventually.
I respect
loop back
Garrison
to being
constantly
Australian.
Trying to get back on track. I respect.
So yeah,
yeah.
So
what are we doing today?
What are we doing, Gare? Who are
we're
we?
We're trying. Well, where it could happen here. There's the same people on this one as the last episode. There's Shireen, me, Garrison. James, Sophie, our producer, Mia, and bad Boston impersonator Robert Evans, and we're talking about what we think might happen in 2023. Mm-hmm. I feel I don't remember all of our predictions for last year, but I feel like we got most of them correct.
Yeah, I think we were right about everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it to continue that trend, what do we think is going to happen this year?
I think Elon Musk might wind up sawed to pieces by the Saudis. there's like a solid 18% chance of that.
There is a non-zero chance.
Yeah.
You know, okay, the thing that's actually the most sort of surprising to me about that is that the SoftBank guy is still alive. Like, as much Saudi money as Elon has blown through, the SoftBank guy, SoftBank guy lit the GDP of a regular country on fire in Saudi money.
It's so funny.
Like,
investing in the most batshit companies in the world.
It's amazing how bad they are with their
money by being landlords. Do you know how hard it is to lose money? With a landlording business?
Yeah. Like, there's a German guy who wrote a book about it.
So true.
Anyways, I think we'll get a really good leak from the British royal family doing something absolutely despicable.
And then, prediction? That's just a thing that has
but
to
like,
happen.
Really
like
high but high quality audio or video, hopefully video. Yeah. And then
see video of what Prince Andrew's doing.
And then it'll make UK politics even worse than it already is.
Not possible.
Yeah, that part I disagree with, but yes to horrifying leak from the British royal family.
Horrifying leak, yeah. From
I honestly don't know how British politics could be worse.
That's fair.
Keir Starmer's going to win an election and somehow make it even worse despite being notionally the left party in the United Kingdom.
I got to say, somebody has to get you people on lockdown for the names. Keir Starmer, that's not a name.
Wait, are you not familiar with Keir Starmer, the leader of the opposition?
Unbelievable. I'm livid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, wait.
But no, I'm not.
We had Boris Johnson, and it really can't get any worse.
Yeah, I never forgave you guys for letting a Boris into power.
Can I get my bad pop culture prediction out of the way?
Yes, please.
Rocky and Bullwinkle?
I think Pete Davidson will date a high profile politician in the next year.
I have a better one.
That's a free space prediction.
Nope, sorry. I have a better one.
Oh,
Pete Davidson is going to date Grimes.
That's on everybody's list. I've seen that seven times.
I think he's gonna impregnate someone. That's my take.
That's boring.
I
think that we're gonna find out something juicier.
All right. Well, you know, it'd be easy to stick with like pretty grim predictions, like there's gonna be a mass shooting at a drag show.
It's going to happen.
That's less a prediction and more looking at where the temperature is going.
Can I do my hack version of that? That's slightly less hack, which is I think we're gonna get an actual shootout between armed fascists and armed anti-fascists in a city that the press actually cares about, so not Portland.
That is entirely possible.
We haven't had a shootout in Portland yet. I mean, that's the thing.
There's
been an exchange of gunfire.
Yeah.
Why don't you all talk at the same fucking time and make Daniel's life hard? One of you speak at a time.
Because we hate Daniel.
Welcome to 2023, Daniel.
Yeah.
I love you,
2023
Daniel.
Is the year we break Daniel.
No.
We have had an exchange of gunfire, though.
No, we have not.
Yeah, okay.
I think she means like...
Oh my God, it has not gotten better.
It hasn't gotten better.
We have had a person shooting into a crowd and another person shooting that person. We have had people fire at each other, but we have not had two different people exchange gunfire with each other. Neither have we had groups of people exchange gunfire with each other. That has not occurred yet. I agree. I think there's a real good chance it does. I'm more worried about the police opening fire on a group of anti-fascists than the fascists joining them. But all of those things are on the fucking table, and it gets more likely every time we roll the dice on that shit.
Mm. Yeah.
One thing that gives me some hope is how the recent events in Texas have been going. The size of the community that has been showing up at the last couple of drag events. And how outnumbered the right has been. As a general rule, if anything's going to make it less likely that either the police or the fascists fire, it's being tremendously outnumbered. So I don't know. I'm in between hopeful and despairing about where the future of that's going to be.
Here's my hopeful prediction. Crypto.com Arena will not be named Crypto.com Arena by
yes,
the end
please.
Of this year.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
That is my That is my hope and dream.
I do think that crypto.com is, well, I mean, it looks like Binance is on its way to collapsing.
That's nice.
Slightly less badly than FTX did, but it looks like it's not going to be around much longer. And crypto.com is kind of in a similar space. I think there's actually a real chance that we see the functional death of cryptocurrency.
Does that mean my stadium gets to be named a normal thing and not something viciously embarrassing, Robert?
No, it's still going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, because they paid up front for that. Yeah. I think it's this like FTX paid like $150 million up front to get their name on that stadium in Florida. They are trying to change it, but I think they're stuck with it for a little while.
Scam Stadium.
Hmm. I'd rather be called Scam Stadium.
That would be
I'd
good.
Literally
that
be called Scam Stadium.
Get a GoFundMe going.
The Charles Ponzi Memorial Stadium.
I still don't understand how you go from here's office supplies to that. It's so embarrassing.
It doesn't even flow.
Okay, we're not doing this right now.
Yeah, I think that we should change the crypto.com stadium. We should name it after Bad Dragon, that company that makes dildos themed after mythological creatures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Based.
Yeah.
Based.
I this isn't like hopeful, but I feel like there's going to be another virus because there are some people that are going too hard in the other direction. I feel like every year there might be a new virus introduced that we're going to have to grapple with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And with it, and, new racist theories about where it came from.
Yeah, probably. But then we're past the point of being able to lock down. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's gonna make it snowball.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Part of one of the scary things about the COVID response is that the how politicized the concept of a lockdown or mask wearing has gotten means that there's effectively no way for U.S. culture to stem the spread of an airborne virus. Like, it's impossible. There's not even a chance.
Yeah.
We done used the parachute and we can't use it again.
We lit the parachute on fire.
Yeah, to own the libs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have been wanting to do this for a long time, but I haven't done it because I don't think it's feasible for work. But I would love, I think people are going to start using flip phones more.
Hell yeah.
I think people are going to step away
Return
from
to traditions.
Yeah, because there's even a psychological study going on right now where a bunch of teens did that and they've reported much better lives or whatever the shit. So I would love to do that myself, but I think more people are going to go that route.
I saw a graph the other day saying the happiest that American teens have reported themselves being was the early 2000s, right around when I graduated high school. And all we could do with our phones was text each other to buy drugs and play Snake. And that's all kids need is the ability to play Snake and buy ketamine.
Yeah.
Hopefully at the same time.
Yep.
That's what's going to do the arena next. It's going to be the ketamine arena in LA.
Well, do you know who could buy the arena?
Robert Evans.
Any of these products and services that support this podcast.
That's right.
And we're back, and this is a section that we're calling death.
This is the death segment. Who is going to die in 2023?
Yes. Can I start this one?
Yeah.
Yes. For effect.
It's gonna be Noam Chomsky. That's who I'm calling. I think Noam Chomsky is gonna die. I think we are going to have the worst two or 3 weeks
of
cursed
discourse.
Media that we've seen in years. It's gonna it's gonna
48
make
48 hours.
It's gonna make Pog Patrol discourse look like tame. Like we're like people are unironically gonna be doing Stalin as a POC discourse again.
You have to pause and explain all of this because no reasonable person is going to know what you're talking about.
We have to blaze through that and pretend it never happens.
I want to know what Pog Patrol is.
I legitimately refuse to explain that. If you want me to explain
content.
It, you need to pay me more than I'm being paid.
I'm sure someone will DM me now to explain it. Thank you very much.
They're the people who are behind all of this insufferable left wing discourse that occasionally breaks through to the mainstream.
They did round two of Anne Frank white privilege discourse.
Jump off a bridge.
All right.
Anyway,
death. Who is going
Elon
to die?
Musk.
You think Elon Musk is going to die? It's likely.
I'm making a Hail Mary, Elon Musk. It's going to be Musk. Drug addiction, maybe. Maybe he ODs.
Oh, no.
Maybe he shoots himself with that fake gun.
He's practicing yoga in his duffel bag when he shoots himself in the back of the head by accident.
That's very specific, James. That's almost like you planned that out.
It's almost like someone already did it in London.
What I think Joe Biden's going to die. I think it's just makes sense physiologically. Like, it's just like that.
Joe Biden.
I have that in my head too. I didn't specifically say Joe. I said whoever is. I said one of the two people running for president in 2024 that are the clear front runners. One of the two will die, causing the election to be even more stupid than it already is.
Yeah. My runner-up is Nancy Pelosi, but. Maybe Nancy Pelosi will date Pete Davidson.
She's not a speaker.
I'm talking about physiologically. It doesn't matter.
She'll be at Vineyards. She's going to be thriving.
And all that will happen if Pelosi dies is that people will sell out of those weird political like action figures. We'll just sell out of all the Nancy Pelosi ones. That's all that will happen if
no,
if
I'm not
dies.
Saying I want her to die or not want her to die. I just think those are the two people that every time I see them, I'm like, how? You know?
Yeah, like, I feel that way with Boris Johnson. I think like, that man has lived a rough one. I wouldn't be shocked if he.
You know what would be the funniest
gout,
thing?
Terminal gout.
You know what would be the funniest thing based on it being 2023? What if the king dies a year after the queen?
He could. There's a decent chance.
You've seen his fingers. That man's not healthy.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Because that would be so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be pretty funny if it ended up with Meghan Markle being queen after all, just because those people hate her so much.
That would be pretty funny.
What I will throw out there, I think there's a decent chance it's Fuentes. I think he's gotten Nick Fuentes has his profile has increased so much so quickly.
That he gets killed by one of his enemies or fans.
I think there's a good chance it's one of his fans. He's already had that wasn't Louis Beam. That was George Lincoln Rockwell.
Rockwell, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, a hack and a fraud.
Part of why I think that there's a chance of that is the weird sex related drama he's had with a number of his followers. Like, he's already messing in those, like, wading into those waters. He's done shit like going over their rooms with a black light and stuff. Like, he's had weird, uncomfortable relationships with his followers that are like distressingly personal, in a way that makes me think that one of them might lose it on him. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a non-zero chance it's Fuentes.
He gets swatted a lot.
Yeah, he gets swatted. I'm less worried about. Yeah, I think like. Murdered by another weirdo right winger. There's a decent chance.
Jason just had a good thing on Fuentes come out today. Mm-hmm.
I think Rudy's dying.
Oh, here's hoping.
Which Rudy?
Giuliani.
Oh, okay.
I disagree.
You think he's going to live forever?
Why?
He's either going to live forever.
He's already dead.
I think he died 4 years ago. To be fair,
that man is made of wax and melting.
Yeah,
he is thriving.
Yeah, another example of that.
I just read a great interview with him in Cigar Aficionado magazine.
Oh my god!
Mm-hmm. My favorite fact about Rudy. So you're not supposed to inhale cigars unless you're one of a tiny chunk of people who think that that's the right way to smoke them. And Rudy's an inhaler. Rudy sucks that smoke right into his lungs. Yeah.
Do you know who else is an inhaler? Is Steven Crowder. And we know that he's had a series of pretty significant medical issues. Mm. I think Steven Crowder goes back in the hospital and I think he'll survive, but he will have to he'll have to be hooked up to machinery to be able to keep going. So he's gonna be doing his show while hooked up to medical equipment. Yeah. I think that is another one of my
Jordan Peterson is not healthy, right? Is he still?
It's impossible to see what's gonna happen with Jordan.
There's a Twitter dedicated to if he's gonna die or not. It's pretty funny.
There is a Twitter dedicated to if Jordan Peterson's gonna die or not. Good point, Shireen.
Speaking of Twitter accounts, I do think this is the year.
Kissinger.
Sorry, yeah.
I think it's never Kissinger.
It's never Kissinger. Always bet against Kissinger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he's going to stay alive.
Yeah. At least to see another election rigged somewhere in the world or a coup.
Wait, he's 99. Okay, I think he gets to 101.
He gets yeah, to like 108. He carries on way longer. Way yeah. longer than what he should. 108, 109 maybe.
How are people, because mm-hmm. I know several of us have said this in the past, how are people feeling about Kanye? Is he going to make it?
Oh, I think Kanye, there's a decent chance, like yeah, absolutely again, seriously. Yeah. Absolutely seriously, there's a decent chance that he dies yeah. from a number of reasons.
Yeah, Garrison and I have talked about this a lot, mm-hmm. and we both are on that side, yeah. where we think that's a
Yeah,
a
I agree with that, I think. Yeah.
Well,
I think the real money is on, does Kanye take anyone with him?
Oh my god.
Oh my god, but yeah.
What if he takes Fuentes? Yeah. What if Kanye and Fuentes go out together?
Garrison, there's not terrible numbers on that.
Yeah. That's so likely.
That is not a 0%.
Oh, I just got a single spark of hope in my dead yeah. soul.
I think this is the year we lose OJ.
Oh wow!
I saw him give an interview the other day, and I mean it was he looked unwell.
OJ is just really? Like Kissinger. He somehow keeps winning, even though he shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sophie. The smart money is never on betting against the juice.
Oh my yeah. god.
All right. Well, do you know who else loves betting? The products and services that support our podcast.
One of the weird gambling things that are auto ads yeah. for us.
Yeah. Michael Jordan's dad for a while.
Robert, that man was murdered.
Yeah,
the guy
but
who
he,
founded
you
the
know.
Donut shop's a Cambodian guy. He loved betting. That was his problem.
All
are
right.
we on break or is this all before the break? Okay, great.
Who's to say? So who's to say, Shireen? We have yeah. no idea.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, we're back.
Any honorable mentions? Like any last throws?
No,
I feel
we're
like
done.
We covered a bunch.
I'll just to say, I really hope it isn't Britney Spears. Thank you so much.
Oh my god. No, all right. Not. Let's see. So final predictions for 2023. You know, there is not the midterms, right? There's no significant kind of election this year, at least inside the U.S. Yeah. I think this is a prediction that's going to hurt Sophie. I think something really bad comes out about Harry Styles, and I am praying for it. I am praying
that hurts
so
Shireen
hard
too, first of
that,
all.
That yeah. something really damaging is going to come out about Harry Styles.
Me. I saw that. Anyway. The only predictions I saw about Harry Styles that he was going to come out with a vow of celibacy. Let's go with that instead.
That is so likely.
No, I think Garrison's on the right track though. I think
whether it be
there's
Harry
there.
Or somebody mm-hmm. else, I think there's going to be a huge pop celebrity scandal. Hopefully, it's not Harry.
Yeah. Well, there was one. I mean,
every year there's a celebrity scandal.
I mean, the I don't
Garrison
know if it's
just
relevant,
said that
but Nick
hurtful.
Carter.
That's right, Sophie. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if it's relevant.
I think we're
going
to learn
Carter's
that
going through some shit with
I don't know.
Sexual assault. Yeah, yeah. It was Ooh. In the early 2000s.
Oh.
He
oh yeah
assaulted a bunch of people and the
and
main person back, that's
yes, isn't there Backstreet Brothers who are Backstreet Boys? I'm like Backstreet Bro. I'm like really yeah. Backstreet Boys who are QAnoners? Isn't that correct?
Oh yikes! Yeah, yeah, didn't yeah. know that. Yeah, but wow, so, yeah. I think someone more happening. Relevant than Carter will be exposed.
Okay, another prediction that's like less of a prediction, more just like looking at current trends and recent reporting. That there will be a big shift away from like a shift away from solar towards nuclear fusion. I think that Ooh. we're gonna I think
the fusion stuff's too far out.
I think on the governmental level, whether or not it works or not, there's gonna be a big shift towards talking about fusion as the solution to climate stuff.
I think that'll particularly be influential around people who don't want to support meaningful climate change mitigation
yeah.
activities
yes.
now. Like, yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah, yeah, like a shield.
I have a China take, which is yeah, that, yeah. okay, so, all right, it's really hard to get good information about exactly what, so, okay, one of the things, the thing that's been happening as a sort of result of the protests is that the CCP's done, like, I don't know, they're doing a traditionally really stupid CCP response, which is that they've basically flipped their policy like on its head in a lot of places. There's been a lot of like They've gone very quickly from mobilizing state resources to like keep people in lockdowns to mobilizing state resources to forcing people to go to work, and it's really unclear exactly what like how bad like the COVID wave they're going to get is. I don't think it's going to be as bad as like the really. There's a lot of predictions that are like a million people are going to die in like 6 months. It's like, no, I don't think that's true. But I think if COVID actually does get into the sort of like China has this very large population of very, very not vaxxed, like old people, basically, like particularly in rural areas. And if COVID gets into those people and those people start dying, I think we're going to see shit in China that makes like the current protests look like a fucking joke. Like, I think we're going to see like people like party officials are going to be getting like dragged through the fucking streets. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, this has been one of my long running beliefs about Chinese society, which is that I don't think you can actually kill a million people in China and not, or even 40 or 50,000 people. I don't think you can have the government just straight up do policies that kill that many people without stuff going really, really fucking wild really quickly. And I think people are underestimating the extent to which, especially in these rural areas, if those people start dying en masse, I think shit's gonna get fucking wild. Yeah, that's my 2023 China hot take.
Alrighty.
I bet someone does something horrific with a 3D printed gun of some kind.
Oh no!
And there's a whole bunch of panic and
I, yeah. I'm,
that
I'm
was the next thing I was gonna say. My prediction was going to be there's going to be significant pressure on a federal level to ban the production of 3D printed guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on an international level.
Yeah, because I think there's a really good chance it happens somewhere in Europe in the same way that, like, you had the Bataclan massacre kind of done using remilitarized, demilled, like, prop guns. Yeah. I think there's a good chance that we get something maybe out of Germany. With a high body count that pushes internationally for restrictions and crackdowns.
Anyone have a prediction on who Trump will pick as his running mate?
Ooh.
Sarah Palin.
I think it could be me. I think I could get
honestly,
it.
Honestly, though, like if you're on the ground in Alaska, like almost every single person that, because Jamie was working on a story for us and that's based in Alaska, they like her there. They're like, she's not that bad. We don't get it. Literally, she's so popular.
Oh no.
Yeah. So
I don't know who Trump's gonna pick. There's so many people he could that feel like. Too obvious or too much, like they're too popular that they could threaten Trump's singular brand. Because I don't think he wants another big voice.
I don't.
He
think
wants
he'll
someone
pick,
to be slightly passive.
I don't think he'll like, pick like
he's
Marjorie
not gonna pick
Taylor
like Marjorie.
Green.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not picking
No.
I don't know which one, but I think he'll pick a black Republican.
I think that's
Larry Elder.
That's
whoever the quietest.
Yeah. Larry Elder's too loud.
Is. Yeah,
I don't think he'll pick somebody he can't.
Herschel
control.
Walker.
Herschel Walker. Mm. Oh God. Yeah. Oh, God. Garrison, don't speak that into being. I don't. But also,
I can imagine that.
I think
that is my prediction.
I think.
But Walker lost, and he does not. He does not like losers.
I think,
which is why he hated John McCain, who lost Vietnam.
I think he'll probably. I think I see him picking a woman.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And sure. I see him picking a woman, which will be good for his optics.
I just don't know of a woman that's either like high profile enough, but still quiet enough that
Sarah
he
Palin.
Would pick. No,
Palin can't be quiet.
He's not going to do Palin.
People be loving Sarah Palin.
It doesn't matter what they love. What matters is that Trump doesn't want somebody who has the potential of distracting attention from him. And she's been a big enough media figure in her own right that I think he'd be worried about it.
I think it's
Kanye.
No, they hate each other now.
I'm just saying that's the vibe I'm getting from what I think he thinks will help him, like a black man that can speak. Kind of the same way Kanye speaks to his audience, like maybe before the anti-Semitic shit. But just a black man Republican, I think, is what will happen.
I think he has two flanks that he can be hit from in the Republican Party. And one flank is just like the anti-vax flank. And then his second flank is like someone who tries to like tap into the evangelical voters who were kind of pissed off at him. And I think,
I mean, I feel like I think DeSantis will probably go after that.
Yeah, but I think he's going to pick someone either to shore him up in the anti-vax front, or he's going to pick some someone who every evangelical knows and who no one else has ever fucking heard of.
I think the latter is more likely with those options. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
somebody from his family. I think he's, I think he's that.
Is that allowed?
That would be really funny.
Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. Yes.
That would be so Barron.
No, it's going to be Ivanka. It's going to be Ivanka.
No, it would be.
Yeah.
Would,
I think she's too woke. She's like.
I think it would absolutely be Ivanka.
Yeah.
Because
she's on the dark side.
He doesn't have an ounce of respect for the rest of them.
I think he doesn't want to fuck them. That's why.
That's actually valid. Not unlikely. Like, if he's going to pick a woman, I think that is actually. That's who I would predict. My money's still on Herschel Walker. But I think that is not a non-zero chance.
Yeah.
Or he goes somebody that's not even remotely in the game at all.
Yeah.
That's likable in, you know, either a religious community or, you know, somebody that's on TV but isn't somebody that's on TV and in your face.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like he's not picking like a Kimberly Guilfoyle or anything like that, which would be so fucking awful. Oh my God. I thought about it. It's really bad for all of our ears. But yeah, so I don't know. It's going to be bad, okay?
Yeah. Can I ask a slightly like related election take on that? Do you guys think that Mike Pence is going to run against Trump?
No.
He's making a stink about
it. No, of course not.
I don't think he'll actually run. I think he'll just, if there's somebody that he deems that's like, you know, a true Republican and a true conservative, then he will.
Pence will back DeSantis.
Shit out of them. Yeah. He'll back the shit out of them.
I feel like it's gonna be. I feel like there's gonna be another person who's not DeSantis who's gonna like.
I agree. There's gonna be another
DeSantis,
person.
DeSantis, like that man on a state, like he has no charisma.
Robert and
like,
I don't think he's gonna run. We don't think he's gonna run. We think he'll wait it out for the next one.
I don't think he's going to run if Trump is running in particular. Like. Especially if Kanye is still in the news, like it's too messy, and he's young enough that he doesn't need to win this time.
And he's so unfortunately well liked in the state of Florida that like
he's got a swing state.
He's safe there.
But he's smart enough to know that like going up against Trump, even if he wins, could get enough stink on him that it fucks him over
forever
in the future. As opposed to just holding on, he'll be 46 in 2028, which is. One of the youngest would make him still one of our youngest presidents.
Yeah.
And he could spend 4 more years just like, you know, sniping at whoever.
Just being a real big old piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. Word.
Giant turd.
Yeah. Well, I hope none of us die next year. I hope none of us die. And
that's how
my anxiety brain works. I had to say it so it's not true. You know what I mean? That's how my anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I just had to.
Thank you, Shireen. I appreciate that. I too wish that.
Yeah. None of us, yeah. We got some work trips planned.
Y'all don't catastrophize? No? Okay, that's fine.
I think that's
Twitter
most will die. Twitter.com will not be a website.
That's a very likely
in a most micro.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a big shakeup there'll be a big story about healthcare and how certain people are not diagnosed over other people, and it's going to become a huge thing, and there's going to be a huge story about that at some point.
Here's hoping. But
yeah, like, I mean, that would there's been, you know, little baby stories about certain things, but I think it's going to become a global issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and more, we will see more bullshit about migration than we have done. Like, we're climate change is getting worse. Like everything that drives migration is getting worse. And it will continue to be this fucking straw man that Republicans use.
So we're already seeing like Y2K and early 2000s nostalgia. And the bizarre thing is that there's not much of a culture after that. Cause around that time is when we started to reset into like 80s nostalgia. So I'm wondering what the next nostalgia cycle is going to be.
I think like things like in Britain, like the whole like landfill indie culture that came around in like the like late like first decade of this century.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
That I think is maybe like Ashcroft hippie dads. 70s.
I saw a video of a youth. I'll just call them a youth.
Wow, Sophie.
A youth trying on one of those cursed stretch comb headbands. Stop it. Those things fucking hurt. You're gonna hurt yourself. You're gonna poke something. It's gonna be bad. They're not cute.
We don't want them back.
We don't need
wristbands.
That.
Wristbands.
Wristbands are already back. Here. I already keep seeing them. And the little plastic bangles back. The butterfly
clips
back.
The snap ones, the ones that snap and
I've seen the snaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, please don't bring back.
Hear me out here. New metal's coming back. We're gonna do it. We're gonna get new metal. We're gonna get early 2000s like goth bullshit coming back.
That's already started.
My prediction.
Tim Pool's doing it. He's bringing it back.
Is that ska will continue to be the most relevant genre of music in American culture.
A fact unchanged
for 30 years.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to our predictions episode, everybody.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you. We'll be back. You know, podcast.
Will we?
It's Taylor.
Shereen, stop talking about our deaths.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Things fall apart. The center will not hold, and journalists will make a pretty good living writing about it all. It's a good time to work the dystopia beat. The pillars of our society have been crumbling for most of my adult life, and probably yours too. One exception to this, up until recently, has been the tech industry. When the rest of the economy shit the bed back in 2008, big tech roared into the gap to prop up the groaning timbers of capitalism. Sure, the housing market was in free fall, huge numbers of people were out of work, and American infrastructure was crumbling like a twice-baked pot brownie. But then Steve Jobs magicked up the iPhone, and the iPad, and the App Store. Google brought us Android, and a dizzying array of smart and connected devices followed. Companies like Uber disrupted massive industries, and, briefly, made hailing a cab the cheapest it's ever been, although they did this by lighting massive piles of VC cash on fire. It was in this period of what would prove to be irrational exuberance that I started my career as a tech journalist. That was the job title my boss gave me, and it's what everybody else in the industry called themselves. In reality, most of us were just extensions of big tech's PR agencies. All the big tech news websites of that era, Slash Gear, Engadget, Boy Genius Review, and the place I worked for, i4U News, made most of their money off the back of a peculiarity in Google's search algorithm. The gist of it was this. If a bunch of websites all published articles that were basically rewritten press releases about, say, a new gadget, or rewrites of someone else's report on rumors about an Apple product, Google would assume that this was a hot topic, and they would bump everybody up on the algorithm. You could make a tidy profit just paying a handful of writers to rewrite press releases or copy reports from some of the few sites doing actual tech journalism. And this is where I got my start in reporting. I wrote 10 articles a day, 5 days a week, for several years, until Google fixed their algorithm and wiped my silly little industry out in the blink of an eye. It's fine. In this case, we kinda had it coming. It was nice to get paid to sit home and write, and the experience putting out a shitload of words every single day that were polished enough to print was pretty good for me. But it wasn't journalism. And so, while I was doing it, I started seeking opportunities to actually get out into the world and do original reporting. And that's what first brought me to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas in 2010. CES, as it's known, is a tech industry insider event for analysts, manufacturers, and media. They come and they show off new products and gadgets and apps, and journalists walk around and look at everything and then write articles about it. Companies spend millions of dollars every year on massive, multi-acre showrooms for their products and dream up ludicrous demonstrations of their new tech. One that sticks out to me from, again, about 13 years ago, is watching some company or another charge an electric car inductively. That means there was nothing actually plugged into the vehicle. They just parked it like you would put your phone on an inductive charger. And they charged it that way. The whole process was so energy intensive that it dimmed the lights in the Las Vegas Convention Center, which, if you've never been inside of it, is about the size of a small city. The spectacle was always the best part of CES, and with all the money pouring into big tech, it was a great place to be a reporter. Every big booth had free wet bars and piles of free swag. I left every year with a sack full of USB drives and thousands of dollars in products to test. There was so much goddamn money everywhere that even a dumb kid like me with no real connections could do okay. Collapse was always and has always been present at CES, however, looming in the background over doomed product categories and vast, tottering businesses that didn't realize they were already dead. I'm thinking primarily of RIM, the people who used to make Blackberries here. Another good example would be Motorola. In 2011, their booth was one of the largest at CES. Now, Apple was, and still is, the biggest name on the block when it comes to making consumer gadgets, but they don't go to CES, preferring to hold their own annual event to announce new products. This has always irritated the people who run the show, and so in the early 2010s, when Android started to blow up as a rival to Apple's iOS, a huge deal was made about Motorola's Droid line of phones. They actually had to license the name from Lucasfilm for obvious reasons. In 2010, Motorola won the Best in Show award for their Droid phone, despite the fact that they hadn't actually brought a working example of it to the show, something that kind of pissed me off at the time. Now, today, Motorola's basically dead. It's a shadow of its former self. It's been bought and sold several times as companies like Samsung and HTC beat the piss out of it on the open market. Other famous collapses from CES's past include the entire 3D television market. If you can remember those heady days after the release of the first Avatar movie, the tech industry blew billions in R&D and ad money trying to convince everyone that people would actually sit down in their actual-ass living rooms and wear fucking 3D glasses to watch movies or TV. It was preposterous and obviously doomed. I have fond memories of harassing PR hacks on the show floor, asking them, isn't this just a big con from the entertainment industry to make it harder for people to pirate media? Are there any actual signs that regular people will pay thousands of dollars for one of these things? At one point, a rep from Samsung, I think, tried to show me a glasses-free 3D TV. It only worked if a trained professional told you precisely where to stand in order to view it. I laughed so hard I snorted whiskey and lukewarm Starbucks onto a stack of glossy product brochures. Despite how obviously doomed it all was, the internet filled with fawning articles about all of the exciting new 3D televisions that were surely going to be in homes in the very near future. Now, because the internet moves quickly, most of the websites that did tech news back then are dead, and the ones that remain are filled with busted links. But you can still find monuments to the failure of 3D television if you know where to look. Take this excerpt from a PC World article on the best of CES 2010. It's titled, "The 3D Revolution is Here," and underneath a broken link to an image that is no longer available is the line, "I don't think it's a false start this time. The 3D product plans for the coming year represent the initial salvos of the coming 3D revolution. Panasonic's 3D demos were among the most convincing, but the best implementation I saw, unfortunately, is one that won't be coming to market anytime soon. Sony showed us its 24.5-inch 3D OLED HDTV as a technology demo only." Now, in retrospect, I think the hilarious failure of 3D TV technology is actually what prepared me more than anything for crypto. If you actually just go over that paragraph I read a little earlier, you could replace the words referring specifically to 3D TVs with various shitcoins or blockchain-related tech, and it would more or less work. The thing that set me off with crypto was how similar the claim was that, like, this thing is obviously legit because look at how many people are talking about it. It's got to be real now because suddenly it's all over the news. This is why folks like Sam Bankman-Fried bought the naming rights to stadiums and stuck FTX and Crypto.com up as publicly as they possibly could. It was all a con to convince casual observers that the crypto market was a serious thing they should invest in. It's one of those things that really made me think a lot about the role journalists play in hyping up nonsense like this. And you can see it in 3D TVs and crypto and a bunch of other spaces. A big part of what convinces people that this stuff is real is suddenly they start seeing articles everywhere talking about it. Suddenly the press all over the place is talking about the price of Bitcoin or talking about this new thing as if it's going to actually change people's lives. And so folks who maybe are not super high information media consumers just assume that, okay, I guess this is here to stay. It's a danger that still exists. All of this brings me to CES 2023. Collapse looms larger over the proceedings this year than at any other prior event I've attended. Prior to the pandemic, attendance at CES had topped out at around 200,000 people. Last year, though, only 40,000 showed, which is probably still vastly too many folks to cram into hotel conference rooms and casino restaurants during a pandemic. And yes, CES 2022 was a super spreader event. Korea particularly had a problem as a result of it. The show itself, for decades a central event in the global tech industry, seems to be teetering. It is not alone there. The top 10 big tech stocks lost a combined $4.6 trillion in market cap in 2022. That's significantly more than the GDP of the United Kingdom, around $3.2 trillion, or the state of California, $3.6 trillion. At CES, the rot is most evident in the utter lack of any kind of hype-beast product this year. So far, I've seen a flying hydrogen car, or at least I've seen 3D renders of one. Also, it's meant for Formula One-style races, not actual civilian use. The guy at the booth somewhat angrily told me the anticipated retail price was around $3 million. The Mecha flying car was one of many products that I looked into at CES Unveiled, which is one of the headline events of the show. It's basically a bunch of manufacturers and booths showing off their gadgets to an audience of journalists who drink heavily from an open bar, walk around, and prod things. In years past, smartphones and tablets and other consumer gadgets tended to be the main focus. But all that kind of stuff is boring as hell now. The smartphone market has stabilized. It's just not as exciting as it used to be, and CES knows it. The big hype it unveiled was around a mix of electronic and autonomous vehicle technology and virtual reality. Now, at present, I'm not in a good position to thoroughly analyze the specific promises made by individual autonomous driving companies at CES. I'll just note that TechCrunch, normally all in for hype about this kind of stuff, published an article last October titled, "It's Time to Admit Self-Driving Cars Aren't Going to Happen." Here's a relevant quote. Ford announced that it would be winding down Argo AI, the company backed by itself and fellow automaker Volkswagen, focusing on developing full level 4 autonomous driving technologies. Ford explained their justification in doing so when they released their Q3 earnings a few hours later, noting that not only were they shutting down Argo, but they were also essentially deprioritizing L4 technologies altogether, to instead focus on advanced driver assistance systems with internal resources. Ford CEO Jim Farley justified this by saying on the company's earnings call Wednesday evening that profitable, fully autonomous vehicles at scale are a long way off, and we won't necessarily have to create that technology for ourselves. Now, obviously, autonomous technology will, of course, have niche applications, automating transport of heavy loads at job sites and mines where routes are predictable and controlled. But mass adoption of full level 4 autonomous driving technology is at present a fantasy. The same is true for one of the other major product categories at CES unveiled, virtual reality metaverse nonsense. The fact that Facebook lit $15 billion on fire last year chasing Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse dreams has convinced some people that the idea is inevitable. This excerpt from a MarketWatch article published during CES is representative. You can see the same thought process that led people astray with 3D TVs and crypto. In the long run, the metaverse will be a major substitute for in-person conventions like CES, said Jun Nishiguchi, CEO of Toraru, a Japanese company developing its own metaverse. So one of the barriers to any kind of popular metaverse is the fact that VR is actually not as immersive as it needs to be. The technology does a pretty impressive job of convincing your eyes that you are in fact somewhere else, and this is pretty neat. But the rest of your body is inevitably standing or sitting awkwardly in a room somewhere. This has led to a whole host of products that are in development right now that attempt to engage the rest of your body and basically trick it into believing that you're somewhere else. I tried two products at CES that were meant to do this. The first was the Tact Suit X from B Haptics. It uses haptic feedback technology, which is the stuff that makes your phone buzz when you press a button on your touchscreen. Companies like B Haptics hope to use advanced versions of the tech to mimic physical sensation. This would make the metaverse feel much less awkward and dissociated, and also provide a whole new market for online sex workers. There are several of these suits at CES, and all of them seem to have won innovation awards, or at least they're honorees in the CES Innovation Awards, which is a thing that basically anyone seems to get if they make something expensive enough and bring it to the show. To be frank, I think these suits are bullshit. The one slightly cool thing about the Tact suit is that the gloves, it had like gloves and a feet component. I was able to test the gloves and the actual chest suit thing. The gloves do a pretty okay job of emulating a physical keyboard, or at least a small keyboard on like a smartphone style device. Now, that is not a cool enough thing for someone to pay hundreds of dollars and deal with the hassle of wearing heavy battery powered gloves every day. The B Haptics folks eagerly showed me how their suit could simulate hugging and touching another human being in VR, and this seemed to be the major selling point they saw for what they were bringing to the table. I actually tried all this, and it was among the saddest experiences of my life. Hugging someone in a haptic suit through VR feels like having a dozen or so N64 rumble packs activate up your chest and arms. If you touch a virtual person's shoulder, your hand will buzz and vibrate. Now, buzzing and vibrating are not sensations I attribute to physical intimacy with a physical person. I actually found this attempt at mimicking the sensation of human contact much more disturbing than the lack of contact in most VR experiences. The tech industry has also pinned a lot of hopes on augmented reality. I think this is closer to being realistic, but there are still a metric fuckton of vaporware and snake oil products, often marketed as increasing accessibility. One example would be the Luvic. This is a device you wear around your neck. It's roughly the size of a pair of headphones. It's supposed to buzz on one side or the other of your body to let you know when to turn, all the while delivering audio map directions for you. Luvic's press materials highlight what a win this is for accessibility, saying, Luvic is a device designed to solve the challenges of those who have difficulty with spatial cognition. It is an IoT, Internet of Things, device that is worn around your neck and uses tactile notifications and bone conduction voice to guide the user along the way naturally. Now, this tech does identify a real need, but I'm sorry to say, it does not work at all. I tried this thing. Luvic's people put it on me and ran through a walking route of New York City. I couldn't tell which side of my body was being buzzed, so that was useless. It just felt like a smartphone was ringing on the back of my neck, and the speakers weren't loud enough to hear directions. Now, when I mentioned this, the Luvic people told me, well, there's too much noise in the conference room for you to hear it. Of course, New York City being famously quiet. And then there's the stuff that I suspect was just outright snake oil, rather than being broken like the Luvic. This is probably best embodied by the electric circlet I saw there that's supposed to stimulate your brain to reduce your stress while you sleep. They advertised, I think the number was 80% reduction in stress while you sleep. This is not a product I feel the need to review. Some claims are not worth taking seriously, and this is one of them. So far, I've seen little at CES that struck me as likely to be a massive financial success, but there were some potentially groundbreaking products on display. Unfortunately, nearly all of these were in the realm of health and medical technology. Let me explain why this is troubling with an example from the show. The most potentially influential device I saw there was called VIRAWARN by Optive. It is a multiple-use breath analyzer self-test that will tell you if you are positive for COVID-19, RSV, or influenza. It just lights up if you're positive for one of them. They promise that in the future it'll tell you which you have, but that's still useful, right? Still a hell of a lot better than anything we've got right now. Rather than sticking a thing up your nose, you just blow into this thing like a breathalyzer. It's about the size of a key fob, and you can charge it with a normal USB cable. It can be used dozens of times before being reloaded. Optive's rough price point is around $100. If this thing works the way they say it does, I cannot exaggerate what a big deal it would be. Imagine being able to blow into a little device and know in a couple of seconds if you're safe before you go into a store or a bar or a party, go see, an elderly relative for a birthday. Lives could be saved by this thing if it works. And to their credit, the good folks at Optive immediately told me that this was not on sale yet as it was still waiting for FDA approval. I take this as a good sign, and I sincerely hope it works as well as advertised. But products like this do present a problem for the tech press. When I'm at a show like CES, it's generally easy to determine if something has promise. If I step into a booth for a company advertising rugged speakers, well, I can drop those speakers from a height, I can drop stuff onto them, I can throw them, I can test if they're rugged because I can try to break them, and if I can't, then they're rugged. Likewise, I can strap on a VR suit and I can tell you if it makes the experience more immersive. Neither I nor any other members of the press can tell you how well a medical diagnostic device works in the same manner. This isn't anyone's fault, but as connected tech and AI are included in more healthcare devices, the potential for snake oil and for dangerous failures to generate mass hype increases exponentially. I want to be clear that the medical devices I have seen so far at CES do not strike me as suspicious in any way. Company representatives were extremely good at explaining what stage in the FDA approval process they were at, and I saw some really cool shit. My favorite was probably a new streamlined AED from LifeAZ. At $1,000 or $35 a month with a 4 to 5 year shelf life, this thing makes having a defibrillator on hand affordable for regular people. It's extremely light and small and can be easily carried in a backpack. I do have a little bit of medical training, and I tried this thing out on a dummy in test mode. I can confirm it appears to work like any other more expensive AED. The device is still awaiting FDA approval, but it has been approved and is being sold in France and Germany, so I feel pretty good saying this thing probably works the way LifeAZ says it does. And then there's my favorite product from CES Unveiled, the Nanshi Domestic Violence App from Athbash, which is a French company. This was first suggested to me via one of the most awkward PR emails I've ever received. Forward, media alert, groundbreaking domestic violence reporting app launching at CES 2023. And when I got it in my email, it just said, forward, media alert, groundbreaking domestic violence, which, fun thing to get in your inbox. In fairness to their very nice PR lady, there's probably not a non-awkward way to title an email about this kind of thing. The app itself is really innovative, though. It provides you with options to record voice or video and to take photos of documents or to photographically document your own injuries. All the data that you save is stored off-site, so you take a picture or you record audio and it's immediately off the phone and off the app. You actually can't access it without contacting the company directly to get it. All of it is stored on the cloud, and it's also on the blockchain, which is used to verify data integrity, making this probably the first blockchain-related product I've ever heard of with a realistic use case. Nanshi seems to be pretty well thought out from the top to bottom. Once you start recording, you can swipe away from the app, and it will keep recording without being visible anywhere on your phone. So if you're in a fight with a domestic abuser and they take your phone away, they will not see that you're recording, but it will keep recording. You can also change the logo and name that the app displays itself under on your phone so that it won't say that you have Nanshi anywhere. You can make it look like basically anything you want. It really does seem like they've thought this through, and it's about the best version of this kind of thing that's possible. There's more. Of particular note at the show was an unpowered mechanical exoskeleton I got to try on. It doesn't increase your physical strength, but it does allow you to sit while standing. The manufacturer, Arkellis, sees this as a way to let workers stand on factory production lines and in retail stores all day long without straining themselves. I feel profoundly mixed about this product, more so than anything else at CES. On one hand, it works really well. I got to try it on, and it's kind of a marvel on the mechanical level. You can still walk perfectly well with it on, but you can just kind of sit at any point going limp, and it's actually really comfortable. On the other hand, it costs $3,000, which means very few retail workers are ever going to see one. So far, its primary use in the real world has been helping to keep auto workers comfortable while they shotgun more cars out into a world with far too many of them. It's all very emblematic of the way CES makes me feel these days. Inside the roiling sea of snake oil and broken shit are some really cool ideas, but they're all wedded to an industry that has mostly forgotten how to do anything new. Over the coming days, I'm going to look at a new smartphone from Samsung. It rolls up, I guess. Check out more VR haptic devices, none of which I expect to work very well, and I will hopefully get to lift some heavy weights wearing a powered exoskeleton. That one I'm actually looking forward to. I am open to the possibility of finding stuff that's cool here. But at the end of the day, nothing I've seen and nothing I'm likely to see has changed my overall impression of where the tech industry is today. It's a big, bloated monster slowly bleeding out before our eyes. Hey, we'll be back Monday with more episodes every week from now until the heat death of the universe.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.